So this is Fit as a Fiddle Plus. I'm Kathy Binner. I am a passive income coach and a health and wealth educator. And you can find all my stuff at kathybinner.com. And I want to welcome tonight Rita Brewer. She is my co-host, and I'm going to let you tell, let her tell you a little bit about herself. And then we have Sunel Baca as our guest this evening. Sunel's been on with us before, so we're excited to talk to her again tonight. And our topic tonight is going to be all about mindfulness. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Rita and tell the folks a little bit about you.
Hey, everybody. I'm Rita Brewer. I'm a physician assistant and private health coach specializing in diabetes reversal. And I'm excited to be here tonight talking anything about health and wellness. And I'm excited about this topic tonight, especially because I think every place we start with our journeys need to have the right mindset. So I'm looking forward to talking about that tonight.
So perfect. Yes, perfect. Thank you. Thank you so much. Now, Sunel has been with us before. And so if you haven't heard her, you're going to be pleasantly pleased. She's a wealth of knowledge. She has a medical fitness and wellness center in Lancaster, Ohio, for those of you that want to know how to get in touch with her. And we're going to put all of that information in the chat as well. And so this is being recorded, and in the replay, we'll also put all of the connections so that you can connect with me, you can connect with Rita, and you can connect with Sunel. So Sunel, tell us a little bit about, before we get started, about how you started this wellness center in Lancaster. I think you started, what, June of 2019 is when you opened, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And it was funny because I thought you were going to ask me about mindfulness right away. So I was getting ready to launch into the mindfulness, how I came to mindfulness. But yes, with regards to wellness with Sunel, the medical fitness center that I have, it's more, it was launched in June of 2019. And so now it's hard to believe that I'm coming up on 4 years, I believe. I think, yeah, 2023, June of 2023 will be about 4 years. So still relatively new, made it through COVID, really excited about that. And yes, we offer a muscle treatment. We also offer some health and wellness coaching. And then also we look at doing some pain management as well. But primarily it's the muscle activation treatment or the muscle treatment. Yeah.
Well, good to know. Good to know. Now, Sunel and I are not that far apart. I'm in Canal Winchester, Ohio, and Sunel is in Lancaster, Ohio. And so we might be, since you're on East Main and I'm on the Columbus side of Canal Winchester, so maybe we're 40 minutes apart, maybe?
Yeah, thereabouts.
Yeah, so we're not too far apart. So welcome. So yes, let's talk about mindfulness. What does that mean for you, Sunel?
Yes, I'm really excited to talk about this topic. And I think I need it most. They say you teach what you need the most. And I think today, especially, I feel like even though I have my own mindfulness meditation practice that I engage in every day, I think it's still wonderful anytime I have an opportunity to talk about it. So the term mindfulness is just really being aware. And a lot of times mindfulness is coupled with the word meditation or mindfulness meditation. And from what I've learned, and I've gone through a program that's a 2-year mindfulness meditation teacher certification program. And during this program, I've been taught by two of the very well-known individuals in the community on mindfulness meditation. So mindfulness is just being present in this moment, being aware, being present, you know, without any judgment. But just simply being aware and being present in this moment and just allowing it to be what it is and acknowledging that. And so it sounds very simple, but Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn, who created a whole center for mindfulness, he says the power lies in its practice. So it's really a practice of mindfulness that really gives us a sense of peace or serenity or even transcendence. So it can be pretty powerful, but I think again it's almost too simple because we're in a culture that's a very rush, rush, rush. We have to go. We have to do this. We're on to the next thing as we're thinking about the thing we're in right now. For example, you are about to ask me about my business, and I thought you were going to ask me about mindfulness. So my preparation was already to talk about mindfulness. So it just kind of brings me back to being present with you and Rita here now and our viewers, you know, in this moment. And I like to add the word non-judgmentally. So as the
I love that. And you are correct. How many times are, you know, or especially if I have some downtime, I often think of my downtime as time to plan for those future things that I need to get lined up and, you know, and get scheduled and what all I need to get done today. And sometimes it's hard for me to just sit there and enjoy my cup of coffee. I get that.
Yeah. It's really interesting too. And I think I did a mindfulness retreat with the local YMCA last month. And it was really interesting too, teaching, you know, what is mindfulness and how do we practice it? Because it seems, you know, how do we fit it into our schedule? So, if we have an opportunity, I'd love to share just a couple minutes for you and for Rita and for the viewers, just to see how it can be a very simple practice, you know, kind of dropping in into awareness. So.
Yes, please bring it.
Yes, absolutely. Share with us because, first of all, how did you get it worked into your schedule? Because I know it is difficult. What were the steps that you took to finally add it to your schedule to make it? And maybe it isn't yet, but let me ask you: is it a daily routine for you?
Yes, and thank you so much for asking. Yes, it is a daily practice for me. And it was interesting how I came to mindfulness meditation. I had started meditating probably about 5 or 6 years ago, around 5 or 6 years ago. And it was a different type of meditation. And at that time too, I had also started to look at the process of completing my PhD. I started the PhD a long time ago. So at that time, I was thinking about going back to school. And I was trying to figure out what was I going to do my dissertation project or my research project. And at the same time, I found out through a colleague about mindfulness meditation. She had done some work in this. She's already a PhD. She said, this might be a great topic if you're interested in meditation. And also this school, this 2-year program came about the same time. And I got a scholarship to be able to go through the program. So this mindfulness meditation teacher certification program, it kind of one of those synchronicities that kind of all work together. It fell very nicely with my PhD program and it became my PhD research topic. And so that's what I'm doing my my work on right now. And so, yes, over the last probably 4 or 5 years, especially the last 2 years, it has become a daily practice for me. And so even going through the program to be able to teach it, I don't know how much I'll teach. I really did it so that I could become, you know, better versed in practicing myself and, you know, being able to do it myself. But the more I do it and teaching it a couple of times so far, we have practicums. So I've taught 2 practicums, 2 courses in the community. And it was so rewarding, I mean, for my students, but also for me. And so that's kind of how I came to it. And so, yes, now it has become a daily practice for me. And there's formal what we might consider formal meditation or mindfulness meditation, where you're sitting in a cross-legged position, or you might be sitting in a chair. But there's also walking meditation, there's lying meditation. So there's different ways to introduce mindfulness meditation. And it can be really, really simple. But again, the power lies in its practice of it. So yeah, that's kind of how I came to it.
That's cool. I wonder, when you're doing, obviously, when you're doing a doctorate on something, you're doing a tremendous amount of research in that area. So what would you say are some of the things that you learned about it during all that research and preparation that maybe you didn't know before, like whether it's the benefits of it or how deeply, you know, it affects people? What were some new discoveries that you found with all your research?
Yes, wonderful. Thank you again. Just great questions. Thank you. So one of the things that I learned was the first thing that came to my mind was self-compassion, the impact, because I use the term non-judgmentally. So it's being present, being here, being now in a non-judgmental way. And I think that term I like to reference, you know, Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn, because a lot of times we're very critical and, you know, not maybe so much of others, but more so of ourselves. Like we're our own worst critics sometimes. So knowing that mindfulness can help us to be able to have more self-compassion And then that kind of opens us up. It frees us up to be able to move in life in a different way and to see maybe our concerns, both positive things, our concerns in a different light. And also it helped me to look at, you know, if we're attaching to something, you know, if something is really positive, we want to hold on to it. If something is negative, we want to push it away. And so part of this practice it's from a Buddhist tradition, and the hands, one's out like this and one's here, so that you can hold things relative. You're holding things relative, not that you're trying to push something away so much or that we're grasping and trying to hold on to it. So it gives us a different way of like kind of looking at that, and thereby helps to reduce stress, reduce high blood pressure, helps us to be able to manage some of our health concerns, you know, those stress-related health concerns. So my dissertation project is looking at how meditation might be able to help reduce work-related stress for the nursing population, nurses.
Well, we need a lot of that. Need a lot of that. Very stressful job. Yeah.
And I think we all tend to carry some stress, right? Whether it's work-related, family-related, finance-related, whatever it might be, relationships, we all tend to have some stress. And I think the mindfulness practice really does allow us to kind of, it gives us another lens in which to kind of view the world. And it also helps us to be able to respond versus react. That was really powerful for me.
And do you teach it mainly like all in meditation mode, or where you're, you know, your eyes are closed and you're breathing and that, like it, with meditation, or you're teaching mindfulness in other areas too that may not be in conjunction with meditation?
Oh, I love that. So I'll give an example. I have to tell you a story because it'll answer this question, I think, kind of beautifully. So I was able to offer a class for cancer survivors. And one of the individuals in the class, you know, after it was a 4-week class, once a week, an hour for 4 weeks. And I think it was either the second or third session, an individual came in and I asked them, you know, how has this impacted your life? You know, have you seen any benefit? And a person said, you know, after taking this class, it was really interesting to me. Like usually when I'm washing dishes, my husband's talking to me in the kitchen and I can hear him talking to me in the background. I'm kind of like, yeah. She said, but this time I'm washing dishes and I put the dish that I had in my hand in the drying rack and I stopped and I looked at him in his eyes and I really just listened. And she said, it had a profound impact on me that when he was talking to me, I felt something different. Like I felt present. Like I really listened to what he had to say. So it was different. And I was like, wow, you know, how powerful. And I feel like that's one of the greatest gifts that we can give each other is that attentiveness, just to be able to be heard, you know? So that's kind of how it happens in our daily life. It can be that formal practice, like you said, but it can also, when you start to practice, I feel like it does spill over into other aspects of our life. Like Kathy said earlier, just enjoying that cup of coffee. Or when you look outside and you see the sun rising or sunset, you know, it kind of touches you a little. It's like, you know, it's that moment.
Right. I teach a lot about that with my, you know, health coaching clients too, as far as just eating mindfully. You know, and I've talked to some people who, you know, talking about having like 3 or 4 cups of coffee a day, which is really not ideal, because of, you know, the caffeine intake and other chemicals that, you know, could be in there if it's not a high quality, coffee. And I said, have you ever just practiced mindfully drinking that one cup? You know, so just sitting and do absolutely nothing else, not multitasking, because usually like we're on the computer and we take a sip and then it gets cold and we keep refilling it. We never really enjoy the coffee because we're not paying attention to it while we're drinking it. So if you just stop and fully engage in just that cup of coffee and just breathing and maybe thinking about your day, but like not doing anything else at the same time as drinking that coffee. And she did that. And then, you know, she was happy and satisfied with just having that one cup, because you taste it and you savor the flavor and you send those signals to your brain and you truly enjoy it. And then you're satisfied with less. And I do the same thing with chocolate, mm-hmm. you know, so I can have a smaller portion, but I eat it mindfully, you know, so.
Yeah, that's so true. Mm-hmm.
This is great conversation. Now I find when Mark and I go to Florida, it's like I give myself permission to not be quite as busy. Once we get on the airplane, even though it's a lifestyle for us now, it's not a vacation. I keep telling him it's not a vacation, it's a lifestyle. And it's so much easier there to enjoy that sunrise or that sunset or that first morning cup of coffee, because I don't have, you know, my computer chirping at me in the background that I have to get something written or something, you know, some bills paid, or again, for those of you that know me, know that I have rental properties and I have to, you know, take care of whatever. So I find it easier there. But once I get back home and I tell myself, I'm going to keep this vacation lifestyle feeling when I get back home, it almost never lasts. How can we practice to where we can keep some of that mindfulness with us even once we get back into our daily routines? How hard is it to change those daily routines?
Yeah, that's a great question, Kathy. Thanks so much for asking. And it's beautiful because, like Rita asked about the research that I've done with my PhD, and there's this thing called neuroplasticity, and it's how the brain can kind of rewire and change over time as we give it a stimulus or a new stimulus. So we don't have to be like stuck in our ways if we're practicing, and it doesn't have to be a perfect. Like people feel like, well, if I'm not doing it every single day for at least 30 minutes, then I'm going to give up. It can just be a couple minutes, and that might grow into, you know, from 2 to 5, from 5 to 10, and that can be over time. But it's like you asked earlier, it really is important for it to become a practice, kind of like brushing our teeth in the morning. It's like, okay, you know, it becomes almost habitual, you know? And so just being able to, you know, make it become an intention. Like I'm going to give it some attention, and it's an intention. And then there's a third part of that. It's attitude. So if we come to it and say, you know what, I'm going to have a positive attitude about this. I'm just going to enjoy this cup of coffee. And I might not be able to get all the way through this cup of coffee, but I'm going to take the next 2 minutes, and I'm really going to enjoy for the 2 minutes, this cup of coffee. And, you know, that could be a practice of mindfulness. So it doesn't have to be perfect. And I really encourage individuals to look at it in, you know, 30 seconds or 1 minute or 2 minutes, because those tend to be doable, right? We always think, okay, I can do this for 30 seconds. You know, getting back into my exercise program, I thought, well, I can do this for 15 minutes. I may not be able to do a whole hour right this second, but, you know, as I was getting back into it, I'm like, I can do it for 15 minutes. And then that 15 minute kept growing and growing. And so, and we can think of it as just a couple minutes, you know, 30 seconds. And then it becomes, you know, more of a practice. It doesn't have to be a perfect, you know, I think we all can attest to our lives are much like a roller coaster. Sometimes we all have these ebbs and flows, right? And so, but if we can come back to it, we know the benefit of it, then mm-hmm. it kind of draws us back to that practice. And it can be prayer as well, meditation. You know, I talk about in my book, like 10 different things that helps us to live, you know, a beneficial or, you know, kind of a life of peace. So it doesn't have to be just those two things or one thing. It's like kind of looking at all of these things that can help bring some joy to our lives.
Absolutely. You know, I know the more I study functional medicine, I'm just learning more and more of the power of healing by maintaining that parasympathetic state. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, Sunil, or sure. We can kind of piggyback together? That is so powerful and necessary.
Yeah, I agree. It's really interesting when we talk about meditation. So I can kind of go on, you know, at length about the different theories behind meditation or mindfulness meditation. Well, maybe not at length, but I can at least talk about 4 or 5. And one of them is the parasympathetic or the polyvagal theory, where we have kind of a fight or flight part of our central nervous system, our autonomic nervous system, where if there's a lion comes into a room, either we're gonna flee or we're gonna try to fight it off. So that's the sympathetic. And then we have the parasympathetic, which Rita just referred to. And that's kind of our relaxation. It kind of helps with our metabolism, our digestion. It helps us to stay kind of calm and relaxed. Then there's another part of the central nervous system that's part of this polyvagal system, where it's a fight or flight or freeze, where we just kind of like, we freeze. It's exactly that. That's what we do. We can fight, we can flight, or we can freeze. That's still part of the sympathetic. I just want to make sure that freeze part is in there too. And then the parasympathetic is the relaxation. And then there's different aspects of the parasympathetic. There's a dorsal and ventral aspect of the parasympathetic system. And so the relaxation part is really part of that meditation influence. And so if we can adopt that and nurture that aspect of our life, it can kind of help us to maintain homeostasis. Because if we're always in that fight or flight in the sympathetic system, again, it increases our heart rate, it increases our blood pressure, it increases the stickiness inside of our arterial walls, the vessel, and that can increase risk for a heart attack. So all of these different issues can occur if we stay in that sympathetic or heightened state all the time. So what we want to do is try to bring that back down to a homeostatic level. Increase the parasympathetic system, decrease the sympathetic system to bring us back to that homeostatic level or balance. And the mindfulness meditation can help us to get back to balance. Does that help at all?
Yeah. What happens to all those folks that are adrenaline junkies that, you know, they constantly want to, you know, be in that fight or flight state? Is that going to affect their health long term?
Yeah, Rita, do you want to answer that?
They'll burn out eventually, you know, and when the younger we are, the more we can usually handle it. But the older we get and the hormonal changes start to happen, the more stress on the body takes place, especially menopausal years, perimenopausal years, our hormones getting all out of whack. So yeah, it's going to catch up with them eventually. And, you know, a lot of people think, well, oh, I'm not running and, you know, in that fight or flight, tiger chasing me type of mode, but people don't realize it's the little daily stressors that we're constantly doing, whether it's, oh, I need my little late for my alarm, you know, and now I'm driving in traffic and then my work stress, and then I didn't eat my lunch. And, you know, like all the little things that happen throughout our day and we're trying to do all day long, all of that adds up, and that's keeping you in that sympathetic state. So we have to work on getting down into that parasympathetic state. And this is huge for me because as a working PA, mother, surgery for many years, you know, you don't have time to eat. It's like you just scop down your food in between your work and then you get right back. And I'm learning more now that I have to work on my eating hygiene, just slowing down and actually chewing each bite. The food should actually be liquefied in your mouth before you swallow it, instead of just swallowing two bites and then and swallow, because it affects your digestion. So when we talk about health and nutrition, it's not just what you're eating, but what you're digesting, absorbing, and mm-hmm. then moving into the cells so we can actually use those nutrients. And I realized that, you know, through lots of work and testing, that how guilty I've been of that and not having enough digestive enzymes, because I'm not taking enough time to chew and digest my food, and how this affects your hormone balancing and how it affects your immune system, which is huge, you know, for me. So it's really been a daily practice that I'm working on now. Because I'm so used to, I'm standing up and I'm eating and I'm multitasking at the same time, but doing that same thing, like we talked about with the coffee and the chocolate, to just sit. And when you have a meal, try not to do anything else. Just eat slowly, chew, and digest slowly, and not too much water while you're eating, because that actually can dilute the nutrients that you're absorbing. So there's so much to learn. And I think we need so much teaching about the parasympathetic system and how important it is. Like you said, it's a detoxification process. It's a cleansing, it's a healing. There's so much work our body does during this phase. That's why good quality sleep is so important too, right? So we're in that mode when we're sleeping. So, but a lot of people don't get good sleep. So yeah, it's so important.
I have a cute little side story that just goes perfectly with this. I was in the beauty salon industry for 25 years. And of course, if you've ever been in a busy salon, it's just kind of crazy. The phones are ringing and every stylist has two customers, one in her chair and one waiting. So she's always, you know, in a hurry trying to beat the clock because she's got another customer that's already there. Because of course, that's how they make their money. So they keep them lined up pretty close together. And I had this one little stylist and she would take her lunch break and everybody, you know, some of the other girls would say, hey, maybe we can all go to lunch together. And she would say, no, I have to do some errands and that's fine. And, you know, and she would just kind of sneak out the door. So finally, long story short, I had the opportunity to chat with her. And I said, you never go to lunch with the other girls. And she said, you know what? She said that my life is so crazy. She said, I've got kids at home trying to always get them out the door and on the bus and homework done and baths and all of that and dinner. And she said, and then I take care, they had a pool. So she said, I take care of the swimming pool in the summertime. And she said, and then I come here and it's just people coming at me all day long. She said, I love to go eat in my car. She said, I don't go to a restaurant where there's conversations and, oh, what do you do? And where do you live? And, you know, she said, I just go and sit in my car. She said, I take my time. I eat my lunch. I get away from everything. And she said, I love spending that lunchtime in my car. And I've never heard anyone else say that. And I thought, how ingenious of her to find a little hideaway in the busy part of her day that she is taking that time just for her.
Yeah. And it's so powerful too. It makes all the difference in the world. It really does. I mean, sometimes when I come home from a busy day at work, when I have patients talking to me all day long, I ride home for 35 minutes in silence, no radio, nothing. I just need quiet. I don't want to hear anybody else talking. And yeah, cause I'm one of those people who gets drained by a lot of people talking. Other people are energized by it, but I get completely wiped out. So yeah, I need that as well.
So I think it also is knowing yourself and knowing what works for you, because not every system or every practice works for every person. So I think it's what works for you. So now what types of things have you discovered actually works for you and for some of your patients?
Yeah, so it's like you said, Kathy, it's really interesting. So when we talk about mindfulness meditation, I think it's how I came to it was an individual by the name of Deepak Chopra. And I remember him giving a little talk about, you know, like meditation and how it's okay to be able to do, but also to be. Like, we're a human being, right? We're a human being, just be. So it's okay to do, which we need to for our work. And, you know, you're very, ambitious woman with a lot of things going on, very successful. I feel blessed to know you. Thank you. But you're very busy. And so you have to do. And he was giving the analogy of Scooby-Dooby-Doo. Like, we got to do, be, do, be, do. You know?
So I love that.
And it's okay. I think we have to acknowledge that the sympathetic system is not horrible. We need it. We need it to survive. It's called survival, right? It's our primitive survival mechanism. Yep. So we need to have the sympathetic nervous system. But being able to slow down is also equally important. And, you know, I just say equally. I think that's important to emphasize, that it's equally important. And so there's, like you said, various techniques, a lot of different strategies. And I like to practice one right now. It's a very simple mindfulness meditation practice. So just where you are, if you will, with me, if it's okay.
Absolutely.
I'd like for you just to kind of find a comfortable position in your chair, you know, or couch or wherever you're seated. And you can leave your eyes open or you can close your eyes. And if your eyes are open, can you just kind of lower your gaze? So maybe you're not looking at the screen, maybe you're just looking down your lap, but your eyes can still remain open if that's comfortable for you. So now what we're going to do, your hands are just kind of seated like lightly in your lap, just kind of feel them there. And we're going to bring our attention to the breath, just noticing the breath, not trying to change it, nothing to do, nowhere to go. Just noticing an inhale and exhale. And then take a breath with me. Go ahead and breathe in. And exhale out. Another inhale. And exhale. And just noticing the breath. And notice every inhale, they'll follow an exhale. You don't have to do anything. It just happens naturally. And after the exhale, there's another inhale. And whenever you're ready, we'll take a collective inhale together. And exhale together. And then you can gently bring your awareness back to the screen. Wiggle your fingers, wiggle your toes, and open your eyes if they're closed and smile.
Very nice. Yeah.
Very simple, right?
Just, yes.
And we just shifted awareness to our breath, but we became really aware of the breath. Maybe you noticed something that you didn't notice before about the inhale or the exhale. And that was just a very simple mindfulness practice. But like you said, Kathy, we can do that with a cup of coffee or like Rita said, with a piece of chocolate. It's really the practice. Is where the power lies, like Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn said. So, yeah.
I am fully aware, though, that having mindfulness is usually not rewarded in our society. It's the person that can do the multitasking, that go, 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 and that do, 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 and yeah. The person that, you know, is spinning all the plates at the same time and skipping lunch. So that the company does better and has, you know, higher revenues and everybody is making more money. And I have a nice little side story. Back in the day, I met a gal that was in mortgage lending back in the 80s, and it was right when all of the interest rates totally dropped. And so everyone lined up around the block to refinance, because that's in the 70s, if you remember, and you gals probably don't remember, but I remember back in the 70s when interest rates were up in the double digits, and we were excited to get a 14% mortgage loan. that was a good loan.
Wow.
And so when things dropped in the 80s and everyone lined up, she was manager of a mortgage brokerage, and I ended up being a writer, where I was writing the loans, and so an originator. So I worked for her, and she also was teaching at a local college. She was teaching the finance part for realtors that wanted to get their real estate license. And finally, she just said, "Kathy, do you want to cover for me at teaching? I can get you approved, to come in as a guest speaker." She said, "If you'll cover for me." And I said, just curious why. And she said, if you never have time to spend the money you're making, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. And she said, "I am so burned out," like Rita said earlier, she goes, "I am so burned out that," she said, I don't even have time to go to the drugstore. She goes, "let alone enjoy doing things, you know, outside of work." She said, "I don't even have time to go to the drugstore and buy shampoo." So she goes, at this point, she goes, I just have to start saying no. And I just have to take some time for myself. And that was a big lesson for me. I was very young at that time. And so that was a big lesson for me. And I just have always kind of guarded my time after that. To some extent. Now, again, I, in the salon business, I did get caught up in the rat race for a while. But then I knew it was time to retire, and it was tough. It was a tough decision, but again, you have to be mindful of what's going on in your world and what's going on in your health and mentally, physically, you know, all of it. So, that was just a big lesson for me. What was your big aha moment that you knew you wanted to really delve into this subject even deeper, Sunil?
Oh, that's a great question as well. Like I said, I had started the meditation. I came to meditation because of overwhelm, stress, overwhelm, and pain. I had lost a loved one, a family member, a niece. She's only in her early 30s. And it just kind of shook me to my core. It was like my sister's daughter, and we were relatively close, pretty close. And I just thought, wow, you know, and I knew that I was thinking about going back to school. So there was a lot of these different changes in my life. And I constantly felt overwhelmed. Like I feel pretty good. And I prayed a lot. And I still do pray a lot. So, but I think the meditation, I think one of my teachers said too, is like prayer is us talking to God or our higher source, and meditation is listening. So it's just a different, you know, acknowledging that two-way street, if you will. So yes, that's kind of how I came to it. There was just a sense of overwhelm and wanting to have some peace and really a seeker for my own spiritual path. It was I felt like there was something more that I wanted to be able to deal with kind of anxiety and overwhelm, more so overwhelm than anxiety, but the anxiety was definitely there too. You know, just kind of feeling overwhelmed and how do I manage these different aspects of my life as I'm wanting to move forward. And so that's kind of how I came to the practice of meditation. And then the mindfulness meditation kind of fell on my lap. Like I said, a colleague told me about it. She already has her PhD and she'd already been doing research and offering classes to the community and teaching. And she works at a university, so she was already teaching there. So she's the one who talked to me about mindfulness meditation. And then I got involved in the 2-year teacher certification program. And that has just, I'll graduate in January, and it has really, really changed my life because there's so much. It was so comprehensive. We talked a lot about the different aspects, mindfulness of thought. Rita had talked about, you know, mindful eating, and I incorporated that in the retreat I did last month. But there's mindfulness of emotion. There's mindfulness of thought, mindfulness of the breath, mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of pain. So, you know, in the retreat, I did a full day retreat, which was my first time ever doing that. So I was really nervous at first. But I think I probably got just as much, if not more, benefit from offering it than the students. So it was about a 6 or 7 hour day of mindfulness practices and self-compassion. And what does that mean? And loving kindness. Like, how do we offer these things to ourselves? You know, I think one thing that's come up in our conversation, we can be critical of the fact that we're not mindful. The whole practice of mindfulness is being in a space, being aware, non-judgmentally, just acknowledge, yes, I am busy. You know, I'll give another example of that anxiety and overwhelm, that when it comes now, because it still comes, it doesn't mean that it's gone away. I still get angry. I still get overwhelmed. I still get anxious. But it's almost, there's a poem by Rumi that talks about bringing those emotions in and having a cup of tea with them. And so yeah. I can acknowledge and I can say, yeah. Okay, anxiety, I know you're there. I know you're trying to help protect me. I know it's okay. I'm all right. And I am listening. Thank you for trying to protect me. So I'm almost having a conversation with these emotions, acknowledging them as emotions.
And you have the tools to manage them too. I mean, I think this is so important. I mean, if you guys see as much as I do, it's just like the whole world is overwhelmed right now. Like everybody I talk to is just overwhelmed by something, you know, careers, like you said, Kathy, we're in this go, go, go workforce in our culture and everybody.
Which is what gets rewarded, by the way.
Right. And businesses, they're, you know, taking advantage of employees and trying to, you know, get more out of you. And people are, you know, doing the job of 3 people because they won't hire more people. And this overwhelm is just rampant. I mean, I think this type, you know, this mindfulness type practice, this is stuff that should be taught in school to children starting in elementary school. And like you, Kathy, the, you know, financial literacy as well, just personal finances. Like these are like such important life skills that people don't start to learn from until they get to that point where they're overwhelmed. Like you said, now they're crashing. They don't know what to do. They're, you know, they're really in a bad place. So, it's just, it's so, so important. I wish we could, we're teaching it more in more places.
Well, speaking of teaching, Sunil, take us through what one of your retreats or what steps is it that you actually teach?
Oh, that's beautiful.
What might that look like?
Sure. So I'll give an example of one technique that I learned as a teacher. And there's many. And so it's kind of hard to, you know, put them all in a nutshell. But I can share one with you. And it's called the practice of rain. Like the, you know, rain outside, R-A-I-N. And it's an acronym. And the acronym stands for recognize, allow, investigate, and nurture. And so it really is, again, it's a practice. But so, for example, that overwhelm, or you mentioned kind of feeling busy, 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 you know, so as you're rushing in the midst of that rushing, taking even a minute and saying, you know, I recognize, oh, I'm rushing right now. and allow it, okay, not trying to suppress it or if it's not there, or judge ourselves, like being really critical, oh, I shouldn't be rushing. Like, yeah, okay, I'm rushing right now. So you're recognizing it and allowing it. Yes, I can feel the adrenaline. I can feel my heart racing and investigate. Why am I rushing so hard right now? Will it make a difference that I take 30 more seconds or a minute? So just by simply recognizing, allowing, and investigating, like a little bit of the mental, intellectual, why am I rushing so hard right now? And then nurture. And nurture is my favorite. It may not be as applicable for the rushing, but it might be. But nurturing is giving ourselves some compassion. It's okay. You don't have to rush so hard right now. I can take a minute. I can take 30 seconds. So being able to give ourselves some nurturing or self-compassion. Another example of that, using that same technique I love, is thinking of, instead of myself as a, you know, 50-year-old woman, think of the inner me, that two-year-old. You know, there's a two-year-old in me, a little girl, and, you know, maybe she's feeling overwhelmed or anxious. And so recognizing, you know, seeing that two-year-old feeling overwhelmed and anxious, recognizing it, allowing it, don't try to suppress the feelings or push them away. Hey, this is what I'm feeling. I'm allowing it. Investigate. I'm feeling overwhelmed because I'm scared or I'm nervous or I'm thinking about the future or I'm thinking about the past or I'm worried about the future. And then nurture, take that little two-year-old, put her in my lap and say, it's going to be okay. You know, we've been through this before, or we've been, you know, through struggles before. It's going to be okay. You know, giving myself some compassion or loving kindness. So that's the practice of rain. Recognize, allow, investigate, and nurture.
I love that. I'm going to use that for myself for sure.
It's pretty powerful. In our class, we learn to do it with a partner. So it's nice to have someone who's actively listening. They're not trying to change your situation. They're not even giving you feedback. They're really just there to listen. And it again, it becomes a very powerful tool. And Tara Brach is the one who taught us that. She has a book called Radical Compassion and Radical Acceptance. By Tara Brach, T-A-R-A-B-R-A-C-K, Tara Brach. Yeah, so she kind of adopted it from another person, another entity. I forget that person's name, but she kind of changed it a little bit and was able to bring it to the lay person. And I think it comes out of maybe either the Buddhist tradition or psychotherapy somewhere, a mix in there. But it's very powerful, the brain acronym. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of them.
I love that. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I love that too. So when you do your retreats, so you say it goes for about 6 hours on a 1 day retreat is what you've done so far. Okay.
Yes. I've done a 1 day retreat. That's about 6 hours. And then I've also done a 4 week class where it's 1 hour a week for 4 weeks. Yeah. And it's, there's usually a talk, or we kind of have a talk early. And then there's the meditation, the mindfulness meditation aspect. And then there's time for just questions and answers, more like what we're doing, more in a conversational dialogue about, you know, how can I implement this? And I really give my response. I don't have answers. these are just, you know, I just offer, you know, responses, because I think also I really believe intuitively we kind of know. And so being in that space, just giving it space, having some space to be able to practice mindfulness can be so powerful. So, yeah.
I love that. I love this conversation. And I try to, I guess in a way, I'm teaching it, but not under the heading of mindfulness. But when I'm teaching my investors, they get so emotionally wrapped up in their properties that they're just a mess when something goes wrong. And I try to teach them to have that distance, you know, to hold it out here, you know, to don't make it that it has that it's so connected to who they are. And actually hold it out here and say, let's look at this logically. Let's take some time, calm down, go get a cup of coffee or tea or whatever, relax a little bit, take a deep breath. Then let's look at this logically on how we're going to solve this problem, and for them to not take it so personal, I suppose. And I've discovered that in my past of working with all of my investors, is one of the things that I find that get them so caught up in everything that's going on in their world is because they're such nice people and they want to fix it for everybody. You know, they just want to fix it. And sometimes it's not theirs to fix. And I think that's probably my biggest aha in my experience of teaching, and in a way, mindfulness, is to realize that not everything is yours to fix.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. Again, that can be really, that can be an eye opener for individuals to be able to have that space, that separation. And I think it's analogous with mindfulness practice, that there's a little bit of space between me and my thoughts, me and my emotions. And when I say me, I mean like the I, like the big I, the I, the source, the who I am, like the involuntary, like we go back to that breath. Mm-hmm. There's nothing I am doing to breathe. There's nothing I am doing for my heart to beat. It's just happening, right? And so it kind of, when we can kind of separate the being from the doing, it becomes a really powerful practice. And it gets a bit deep, you know, in an hour, but
it does.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. So do you have any retreats coming up soon that anybody can, one who is interested in joining, can tell them about?
Yeah, I've done things with the YMCA, and I've talked about working with them maybe in the first part of the year, probably January. So I'll have to kind of firm up the dates. That's TBA to be announced, but yeah.
So those are all in person then? All your events are in person?
Typically, I've only done one so far, the retreat. And so the actual class, the four-week class was in person, and the retreat was in person. So, but I'm definitely entertaining the idea of doing something through Zoom. You know, I feel like if there's interest, you know, particularly Kathy and your audience, if people are interested, you know, I'd love to know, because that kind of motivates me, like, oh, there's interest. I think when you're doing something, you know, it's part of your natural practice, your world, you don't realize how it might be of, you know, greater interest. I think as like I said, I came to the teacher certification program really for myself, to be able to practice more myself and to take a deeper dive. And it's been absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing.
And your message is so important. It is just so important, especially today. Rita was saying how crazy busy everyone she talks to is, so much into that overwhelm. And so your message is so important to get it out there, that folks know that there are some alternatives that maybe they hadn't even thought of. They haven't slowed down long enough to know that there are some of these alternatives. And so I just really love that. Now, I'll, you know, joking all aside, you know, I do have a bed and breakfast in Canal Winchester. And if it's all gals, you know, I can sleep four gals in each room. So we could have 12 gals and we could do a retreat.
Oh, that's beautiful. I think that's a great idea.
You should totally do it. That would be awesome.
Yes,
yeah.
Thanks for saying that. Thanks for sharing.
Oh, goodness. So anyway, I'll just toss that out there. So my point in that is not necessarily with me, but you could do some sort of a retreat type environment, which would be perfect for. or topic.
Yeah, I think that would be perfect. I think if your audience, I love to kind of take you up on that, because it's really interesting to me, the retreat setting, when you're kind of immersed, mm-hmm. and then you take those nuggets, it's kind of easier a bit to be able to come back home and start to implement a practice. And then, you know, it's nice to schedule another retreat maybe 3 or 4 months later, because, you know, again, it becomes more of a, that's part of our self-care. Like you said earlier too, what you were talking about, individuals kind of taking the time, that the young lady who went to her car, that was part of her self-care. Right. That was another part of the retreat. You know, I had a section on self-care and self-compassion. You know, what does self-care look like for you? Right. Part of our women's wellness program, we were going to do a self-care program. And mm-hmm. so it's so important. And it's better to try to implement before things happen, if at all possible.
Right.
Well, and it affects our health in every area. So, and I think once folks realize how important it is to keep their health, and again, we're talking mentally, physically, and then we can even branch that on into financially, spiritually, it's all aspects of our health. Yeah. And it is so important to be mindful in all those things. And I do think that, and I don't want to say it's just women, but especially women, we get caught up in, you know, in trying to keep everything going.
Caretaker for everyone and everything. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. It's just inherent in there. And, you know, it's what we do. And, you know, we have a tendency to do it even when we don't realize we're doing it.
Yeah. Yep.
And so, and again, then we allow ourselves to get stressed in all those areas of our life. So I think it is so important. This has been a great conversation. I love it. Sunil, I love talking with you. I'm so glad that you visited our podcast twice this year. We would love to invite you to come back again next year. You always have such great information. We are lining up our schedule. So take a look at your schedule and see if there are any dates that you would like to jump in with us on our free meetup. And again, we meet, and I always have to look, am I right, Rita? It's always the fourth Monday of every month at 6 o'clock Eastern time. So for those of you that are listening, mark your calendar, the fourth Monday of every month at 6 p.m. Eastern time, and watch for Sunil to come back again with some great insight on additional topics. Rita, is there anything you'd like to share that's going on with you that you have coming up?
I'm going to be doing some more webinars on type 2 diabetes reversal coming up in the new year. So if you want to be involved in that, they are free. Just get on my website, ritabrewer.com, and subscribe to my newsletter, and you will be in the loop for when the dates are coming up. And I am taking on one-on-one clients and for this new year as well. So space fills up fast. So go ahead and book a free call with me and see if that sounds like a good fit for you. And Sunil, how can people get a hold of you? I see your website is wellnesswithsunil, CENELL.com. Is that the best way for people to find you?
Absolutely. Yes. They can just go right to the website. They can schedule appointments there. They can contact me. The phone contact is also on the website. And I'd love to hear from viewers. Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. Mine is ritabrewer.com. I'm not sure if I said that.
Yes. Yeah. And mine is kathybinner.com. And you can scroll down to the free meetups for Fit as a Fiddle Plus, where you'll see myself and Rita once a month. And if you register, if you click through there and register, that puts you on our mailing list, by the way, our email list. So if you'll click through to get our replays, for Fit as a Fiddle Plus, you will receive a weekly reminder of all of our upcoming events. And that way you won't miss any events with us. So perfect. So thank you, ladies, so much. This has been a great conversation. I love it. And I know it's a busy time right after the holiday, right after Christmas. We still have New Year's coming up. We all may still have family in town if they made it there without their flights getting canceled. Talk about stress. And so anyway, enjoy the holidays, and we will see everyone in the new year. So thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
All right. We'll see everyone later.
Bye-bye. Bye.